The Jewish Hour can now be heard on jcastnetwork.org, your portal to Jewish broadcasting. It's also on iTunes and on your smartphone using the Stitcher app. Welcome to the Jewish Hour. I'm your host, Herschel Finman. We've got a great show for you today. In this half hour of the show, we're going to be playing an interview with Rabbi Shmuel Kaplan, who was responsible for an illuminated Hasidic Siddur that came out a couple of years ago. They've now come up with another volume specifically for Friday night services. And so we'll be talking about that davening prayer. What does it mean in the light of Hasidic thought? Oh, fascinating, fascinating stuff. We are in the portion of Bahar Bichukosai. We are ending the book of Leviticus this week. And it's very insightful, philosophical stuff. We'll hopefully have time for that. We've got a great Hasidic story at the end. A cappella music, of course, because we're still during Sfira. But before we do anything else, let's go right to the news. A Palestinian Arab terrorist was arrested as he tried to stab Jews at a light rail station in Jerusalem. Light rail police opened fire and captured him. A protest by Jews from Ethiopia turned violent as 55 officers and 12 protesters were wounded and 43 protesters were arrested. The protest follows the beating of an Ethiopian IDF soldier by a Holon policeman. Two UN peacekeepers were wounded when mortar shells fired from Syria hit their base in the Israel side of the Golan Heights. The two were evacuated to Israel for medical care. The Sudanese army, this is one of those stories that has so many disclaimers to it, but the Sudanese army claimed it shot down an Israeli drone after Israeli warplanes struck sites around the Sudanese capital of Khartoum, destroying weapon sites apparently designed for Hamas terrorists in Gaza. 11 members of an ISIS cell in Spain were arrested for planning terrorist attacks on Jewish stores in Catalonia. And that's all the information I have about that one. Israel's foreign ministry issued a low-level travel advisory for Nepal after the earthquake that killed over 7,000 people. The reconstruction process in Nepal will take some time, and there is a shortage of medicine, erratic food supply, and contaminated drinking water, it said in the warning. And finally, FIFA, the International Governing Board of Soccer, is planning an annual meeting, and it will include a proposal by Palestinians to suspend Israel from international competition. The proposal won't likely succeed, as we reported here on the Jewish Hour. FIFA President Sepp Blatter said he opposed it. The proposal would need 3/4 of the membership to pass. And that's the news.
Some of the best jobs in the world are in the radio and television industry, and you too can join the workforce in as little as 8 months when you complete your hands-on training at the Specs Howard School of Broadcast Arts located in Southfield, Michigan. At Specs Howard School, students get to play and learn at the same time. Imagine spending your class time behind the microphone, spinning music and hosting your own radio show, or designing and lighting a set for your own TV program, running a camera, learning to edit, directing a program. When you go to Specs, your day will be anything but dull. And if school is this fun, imagine how exciting it is to work in the growing industry. In addition, the credits you earn while attending Specs Howard School are currently accepted at 14 area colleges and universities. If you've always wanted the best job in the world, call for a tour of Specs Howard School at 248-358-9000. That's 248-358-9000, or visit them on the web at specshoward.edu. Specs Howard School of Broadcast Arts. This is where you start.
Herschel Finman here. You are listening to the Jewish Hour. We are on with Rabbi Shmuel Kaplan, who is the head shliach, the chief rabbi of the state of Maryland, for helping Lubavitch there. How are you today, Rabbi Kaplan?
Thank God, wonderful.
Good to hear. Good to hear. Okay, with a new Siddur, a new version of the Siddur, Siddur with commentary, the Siddur illuminated by Hasidus, just published by Kahos and Sichas in English. And it's a wonderful work and commendable, and you're one of the major impetus behind it. And two thumbs up and five stars the whole business of here. Before we get into the book itself, let's go back and give some background to the nuance of prayer, davening, tefillah, in guise of the Baal Shem Tov, the founder of the Hasidic movement. What was prayer before Hasidus? What's prayer once there is Hasidus, Rabbi Kaplan?
Well, you really have to go back to the Torah itself, because what the Baal Shem Tov did was not anything new, but rather renew the concept of tefillah, where most people think of it in terms of a shopping list. No, tefillah, to pray in legal language, means to ask for. You pray to the court, you're asking for. So you come to God and you ask for, and that is an important part of prayer, but it's not the totality of prayer. The Torah says, to serve God with all of your heart. And the sages say, what kind of service do we know of that involves the heart? Because the service, when we speak about service, we mean service of the temple, we mean sacrifices and such things. And now we're talking about a service with your heart. So the Talmud says what it means, tefillah, it means prayer. Prayer is a service of the heart within the heart. So the idea that prayer has an emotional aspect to it and a very profound feeling relationship with God, that comes directly out of the Torah. But during the course of time, since prayer is considered a time to make requests of God, which is extremely important as well, because if you ask God for things, it means that you are acknowledging and recognizing that God is the source of all of these blessings. So even if it's small things and petty things, one would say, well, why am I bothering God with petty little things? Oh, no, on the contrary. When you recognize that God is involved, even in the little things of life, that's far more commendable and a greater drawing of God into your life than just the big things. You know, if there is someone that you have that you share the major events of your life with, that's one thing. But the friend that you share details with is a much closer friend. So when we speak of asking God for things, which is one facet of prayer, the more we ask and the more details we ask for, the more robust our relationship with God is. However, when that becomes the totality of the focus, it is deficient, because a human being is made up of many components, and our relationship with God has to embody all of these components. We shouldn't have one-dimensional relationship. So we look to have both a relationship where God is providing us, we ask and he provides, and we look for a relationship which is an emotional relationship. We also look for an intellectual relationship. So then you have a complete and a robust relationship with God. So prayer is that central part, which really is the backbone, as it's used in the Talmud, is the backbone or the chut ha-shedra, the spinal cord, which connects all the different parts of a Jewish body, and that's the prayer. So prayer, as time went on, became more of a rote expression. You know, we have an obligation to pray, whether it's a synagogue or at home. So you open up the sitter, you go through it. It's the same prayer every time. You get through it, you go, almost because you can get through it, and you're over and done with it. I did my prayers.
Okay, let's stop with this 1 second. Let's just stop for 1 second. The prayer book, as far as Jewish liturgy, is about 2,400 years, meaning that from the time of Moses, for about 800 years, there was no formalized, people didn't go to the synagogue and pray. That wasn't our mode of communion with God. It wasn't only until the destruction of the first temple that they needed this substitute for the sacrifices. So if you could pick that up from there then, with the formulation of the prayer book as we have it.
Okay. The Siddur, although parts of it, the most important parts of it were established at the time, just before the destruction of the first temple. And it was a way to preserve our religious involvement with God during a time when the temple would be destroyed, because the exile then was for 70 years. And the Jewish people were in Babylon, which was a strange language. They were not fluent in Hebrew, and they needed a language with which to communicate with God. And so the formal prayers were instituted, the standardized prayers, by the men of the Great Assembly. Now, the reason they did that was twofold. Number one, if you want to compose your own prayer, you really have to be very, very careful in what you say to God, because there are times when you will say things that are entirely inappropriate, though you may not realize it or mean it in that way, but you can say such things. For example, we say about God in the prayer, Hokel HaGodol HaGibor V'Hanoro, who is the great, powerful, mighty, and awesome God. Well, is that it? I mean, that's all you can say about God? Of course not. There's much more that you should and could say about God. And if you said it all day with praise, would you be completing all of his praise? Also not. However, our sages extracted these three critical words from the Torah, where Moses used these words. And because it was put into the Torah, we know that these are the primary words to use in that context of praise of God. So therefore, what they did was they took the appropriate phrases and put them together as a prayer of what we should be saying so that we do it in the right, appropriate way. In addition, we made sure that we had the language, the Hebrew language, which has many nuanced meanings. So when you look at the Hebrew, it is a very fascinating distinction between English and Hebrew. English is a very rich language. We have over 1 million words in English. And every idea has a precise meaning. So you take a word, you could, for the same kind of thing, you can get 5 different words, and each one has a little bit of a variant meaning. Hebrew is different. Hebrew is a very narrow language, but every word can have different nuanced meanings depending on the context. So when you have Hebrew words, they have relationships and meanings which are beneath the surface, but you wouldn't see it on the surface. When we are saying the prayers, we're not just saying the immediate translation of those words. We are also saying the deeper sub-meanings and sub-context that you have with all of those words, which is why we are so insistent that prayer be in Hebrew, even though, technically speaking, halachically speaking, by Jewish law, you can pray in any language that you know. But you lose so much of it. It becomes just one-dimensional prayer as opposed to the full meanings that you can tease out of prayer. So that's why the men of the Great Assembly said we need to have a formula which accomplishes all of these goals in prayer. That was used during the exile, the 70-year exile, Babylonian exile. It was then basically discontinued during the time of the Second Temple, and then was reinstituted by Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai when the Second Temple was destroyed and the Jews were once again in a state of exile.
Okay, thank you very much for that history. That's great. You mentioned before, just very quickly in passing, about this idea of we don't want our prayers to become rote. When I was in yeshiva, there was a rabbi who would say there are 3 types of people who finish their prayers at 3 o'clock in the afternoon. There's the guy who wakes up at 2 o'clock in the afternoon. There's the person who starts at 10 o'clock and sort of kind of understands what he's saying, but just kind of gets off on just saying the words. And he called that davening ba'arichus. And then there's the person who's davening ba'avoida, that the davening, the prayer, is changing that person. Let's focus on the last two. This idea of, he said, there's nothing wrong with davening ba'arichus, davening at length, and spending times with the words, even if you're not familiar with all the nuance thereof. So if you could say, what is the goal, therefore, when a Jew, or the supposed goal, when a Jew sits down to pray, what is he trying to accomplish?
First and foremost, an emotional experience. You're looking to communicate with God emotionally. That's what you have to do. So the you say the words, yeah, I mean, the words have a meaning, but is your emotion engaged in the words? So you look at people when they talk. For example, you have computer-generated speech. It's become a little better today. They've put a tremendous amount of work in it. But generally, the way we've always heard computer-generated speech is...
The monotone, you know, yes.
I am whatever the robot's name was. What was that? It is words, but it's words devoid of any emotional content. When we speak as human beings, the majority of the communication that we are doing is not in the meaning of the word that we're saying, but rather in the way we're saying, the emotion that it's carrying, the tone. That's where we come across with communication. It's, I think they say today, 70% of communication is tone and emotion and not the actual words. So we're looking in the words of prayer to infuse them with genuine emotion. And the words really were built for that purpose. The words have and they carry an emotion with them. If you let yourself go through the words, think the meaning, and I would say dissolve yourself into the words of the prayer, then you feel the words coming out, and every word is an emotional word. And we need that because the whole purpose of the prayer is to establish that emotional connection with God. And that's done through what you would say would be the arichos of tefillah, the lengthy way of prayer. Going to the next step, what you said about avoda. The word avoda comes from eres avudim, which means the tanning of a hide. What happens when you tan a hide? You actually have to change the structure, the cellular structure of the material. Because a hide, if you just left it as is, would decompose, like meat or any kind of protein. What we do when we make a leather out of it, it doesn't decompose. The leather doesn't begin to ferment and rot. Why not? Because we have changed the cellular structure of the hide.
That's fascinating.
And we have made it into something else. We as human beings have a very materialistic structure, emotional structure. What we want to do when we engage in emotional experience of prayer is to literally change the internal structure of the heart, that we should be sensitive to matters of spirituality, sensitive to others, sensitive to things beyond just what I need and what satisfies my material needs.
Okay.
I'm in total agreement with you.
Yes. There's an interesting statement from the Baal Shem Tov. We can talk about now the Baal Shem Tov's influence in making prayer a pivotal part of a person's day. Actually, one of the major tenets in Hasidic philosophy is that prayer can be used as a tool for self-improvement, which I wanted you to talk about that. But the Baal Shem Tov, in one of the books which is attributed to the Baal Shem Tov, says that when a person says a word of prayer, when he's reading from the prayer book, he should say it with the same feeling as though he's saying goodbye forever to an old friend. So if you could comment on that and this idea of self-improvement, Rabbi Kaplan.
Well, no, the Baal Shem Tov is talking about the emotional feeling of the word. That's really what we're looking for, the genuine feeling in that word. So mm-hmm. It's not just a word spoken, it's a word felt. As the Baal Shem Tov once said, an interpretation of the words that God said to Noah, "Bei el ha-teva, go into the ark." The word teva has a dual meaning. It can mean an ark, it can also mean a word. Bei el ha-teva, the Baal Shem Tov said, means go into the word. Well, how do you go into a word? It means dissolve yourself in the word. Involve yourself in the word. So, you know, I don't like to take this analogy, but, it's something people can really hold on to. What is acting about?
Acting? You mean like drama?
Yeah, an actor. What is a good actor? When you say a good actor, what do you mean by that?
He becomes the part.
In other words, the words that he is saying are not mechanical words. He is the word. He's living the word at that moment. And that's what we mean when we say "boyel ateva." It means that you're not just emitting a word, enunciating a word. You are experiencing a word. So you look at that. There are words of prayer, and you look "shalulukai feres b'mayim adirim." The words are taken from the song of praise at the sea. They sunk like lead in the mighty waters. Think about that for a moment. Think about that image. Think about the sinking of lead, the intensity of lead, the heaviness of lead, the inertness of lead, the churning of waters, and the action of them sinking in this process. When you say those words, solaluka ifeles b'mayim adirim, it's a different kind of word than you just saying the words right there.
Indeed.
Because you put yourself into it.
Indeed. Okay, now let's talk. If you're just tuning in, our guest today is Rabbi Shmuel Kaplan. He is the chief shliach, the head rabbi of the state of Maryland, and is a major impetus of a new work on the Siddur, the prayer book, the Siddur illuminated by Chassidus. What was the impetus, Rabbi Kaplan, of putting this out? Let me just tell you just a little aside before you answer the question. 38 years ago, when I started my journey into Judaism, so I found a copy of sitting on a shelf in the yeshiva of something called Pirush Hamilos. And I knew at that time, as much as I knew, is the word Pirush Hamilos means the explanation of davening. So I said, oh, this is really cool. I want to know what davening is all about. So I took down this book written by the second Lubavitcher Rebbe. I had been religious for about, you're laughing already, you know where the story's going. I'd been religious for maybe 8-9 months. And I started to read and just like went, what is he talking about? And I said to somebody, I said, isn't there an English copy of this around? And he just looked at me and said, no, and there never will be. And here it is. I'm looking at the footnotes of most of your stuff. It's taken, a lot of it's taken from this very said work, Pirush Hamilos, which is written by the Mittler Rebbe, the second Lubavitcher Rebbe. So what was the impetus behind this English edition of Pirush Hamilos? I'm looking at it, when I look at it, I said, are they going to come out with a Hebrew edition of this, which would be like sort of like the backwards way of doing it? Go ahead, Rabbi Kaplan.
Well, you know, we were trying to help you out 38 years ago. We just came 38 years late.
Indeed.
Look, the fact of the matter is that in the modern world, especially with the degree of distraction that we have, and the inability that we have developed to focus because we are involved in so many things at any given time, we have lost the capacity to really daven, to pray in a serious way. And one of the reasons is that you've got to engage the mind in order to engage the heart. If your mind is floating, your heart is nowhere around either. So how do we get the mind engaged? There is a tremendous richness and depth in the prayer, which is brought out in Hasidic philosophy. Because Hasidic philosophy spends an enormous amount of time dealing with verses and words of prayer, though it's not in an organized, systematic way. It's thrown about through all the thousands of volumes of Hasidic literature. So in order to make it accessible, I think, to a broader community that has trouble reading the Hebrew, especially when it's esoteric and it's a lengthy treatises, they need it more in a encapsulated form where it's a brief kind of review which gives them the essence of the meaning of it, and it's something which they can study and begin to adapt into their prayer. That's what we were trying to accomplish. So I actually did this with one of my close friends, also a prominent supporter of ours, Yaakov Cohen, and we spent two years or so studying prayer this way, and because it's sort of a favorite of mine, I've collected these things over the course of many years, and I did that program with him, and I said I was in Israel once, and I was talking about the need to reinvigorate our prayers, and everybody agreed that it's a very important thing, but the fact that it's not accessible was the problem. So I met Eli Tauger there, was sitting there, and he said, I said, Eli, I know he does translating and this kind of materials. So I said, are you interested in work on this? He said, I'd be delighted to work on it. Well, I came back and I spoke to Yaakov Carr, and I said, Yaakov, would you be interested in sponsoring something like this? And he said, I guess I would. Yes, I'll do it. And
right, so we had the right place at the right time.
Yeah, and so we got to. It costed just about four times what we expected it to cost. That's another story.
That's always
but
story.
We had the two things together, and we began to put together a team to work on it. That did take us 3.5 years to put this together.
Okay, now let me ask you. The amount of works in volumes of the Hasidic library would Esther, in my house, I think it fills up about 2.5 ceiling-to-floor bookcases. I'm not exactly sure how many volumes that is. And I would say that something to do with the prayer book would occupy what percent of those 2.5 ceiling-to-floor bookcases, Rabbi Kaplan?
In my opinion?
Go ahead.
This would be a real guesstimate, but maybe 15%.
15%. Okay. So 15% of 2.5 bookcases would be three solid shelves of books.
This is
Hebrew is one-third the length of English. So obviously you didn't put everything into, that it says in this Hasidic library, into this one small
book.
No,
not nearly.
How did you decide? Yeah, if you were to translate everything, the book would not be impossible to hold. How did you decide what went in, what didn't?
We looked for things that were really more closely interpretive of verses, of verses of prayer, and things that were somewhat easier to grasp. Because the more Kabbalistic and esoteric things, we omitted. And even at that pace, we did not put in all the material that we had. We actually have it on the web. We have the Siddur, which we have much more material posted there, because there pages don't matter. You have as many pages as you want. But as a matter of fact, we have another thing. We have on the web. We have a click through feature, a hot type, where if you want to see the original, you click on it, and it'll give you the original Hebrew excerpt. So you can actually have it in Hebrew as well.
Before I go further, if you don't mind, could you give us the website, please, for that, since we're talking website?
Sure. It's Chabad.org/Siddur.
Easy enough. Siddur is S-I-D-D-U-R. Go ahead. Can I continue, please?
Correct.
Kaplan.
Yeah. So we started with that. Now we distilled it and chose the things that we thought were best suited. And even at that, we ended up with appendices in the back because it was too much to fit on a page. But we think we've done a pretty good job. If you spend time with it, there's no question it's a heavy kind of work. It's not a reading book; it's a study book. But if you do that, it will dramatically change your prayer.
Yeah, I actually have to tell you, I gave the book about 3 weeks ago to someone whom I learned with, who told me just recently. He said, "Rabbi Finman, I hate you." And I said, "Why?" And he said, "Well, I don't want to stop davening now because of this book." So I recommend excellent. Can I ask you a really hard question, Rabbi Shmuel Kaplan?
Well, I can't stop you, can I?
Yeah, because this will be where I have to wrap up. I noticed in going through it, there are what's referred to as the 12 preliminary blessings, which we thank God for basically everything that God has given us. There is a blessing which is included in the Siddur, which you didn't speak about at all. You kind of just jumped right over it. And that's the blessing where we thank God for not making us a woman. Could you comment on what's that doing in the Siddur, and why? What would be a commentary that you would put there?
Okay. I mean, we don't have any specific commentary. We didn't find any on that particularly. But the idea behind it is the following. What are we trying to thank God for? That he gave us commandments to observe, because the difference between men and women from a halachic point of view is that there are commandments, time-bound commandments, which men are obligated to observe, and women are not obligated. They may, but they're not obligated to do it. So when we thank God to be a man. What does it mean to be a man? It means that you have the opportunity for the additional commandment. You can fulfill the image. People think that we thank God for a man, it means because I have a beard, or I thank man because I'm taller and I'm stronger, or I'm whatever else I may think of what a man is. That's got nothing to do with it. We're thanking God specifically for the opportunity to do the mitzvahs. Now, here is the critical factor. You can't thank God for giving you opportunity until you have exercised the opportunity. In other words, if you actually do the mitzvot during the day, then it's a blessing for you. But what happens if you don't? Then what have you accomplished? So what we do is we say, we thank God that he has not made me a woman. Therefore, I am the category where I can now, on my own initiative, make myself into a man by observing those commandments. Because that's what makes me a man, nothing else.
Okay, so you're saying I'm thanking God for making me more subservient?
Why subservient?
Subservient meaning I have to do more now.
No, that's right. You're thanking God for opportunity. God, because I am not a woman, if I so choose now, I will do what makes me a man.
Gotcha. Okay, we're going to have to let it go. We're going to have to let it go at this. I want to thank you so much. Our guest has been Rabbi Shmuel Kaplan.
You're welcome. Have a good Shabbos.
Take care. And if you want to get a copy of this, it's available on Kahoot Online, K-E-H-O-T, online, all one word, .com. And it's also at Amazon, and it's definitely worth getting. And we have to take a quick commercial break, and we'll be right back. You're listening to The Jewish Hour. Do you or someone you know have an addiction to opiates? Ready to take your life back but don't have the time for a long inpatient program? MDS Drug Detox is a team of physicians with extensive experience in the field of rapid drug detox under anesthesia. MDS is the nation's only rapid opiate detox under anesthesia facility with the same doctors, RNs, and certified paramedics attending the entire drug detox process. MDS Drug Detox is safe and effective. Their goal is to provide the best, the safest, and the most economical way to free you from your addiction. MDS uses the highest standards of care and the best FDA-approved medications. MDS Drug Detox understands what your concerns are. Make the call today, 888-637-6968, or go online to www.mdsdrugdetox.com. That's 888-637-6968, MDS Drug Detox. Herschel Finman here. You're listening to The Jewish Hour. That was indeed, that was inspiring. Wow, that's great stuff. Anyway, we're now up to our musical interlude. This is A.K.A. Pella, also known as Pella a cappella. And this one is called Yavo V'Yolenu. Mashiach is going to come and he's going to redeem us. Let's listen.
Yeah.
assurance of quality and excellence in kosher? Look for the Michigan K on the label. What's it look like? The Lower Peninsula of Michigan with a K. It's the symbol of the Michigan Kosher Supervisors. Go to their website, mikosup.com. That's M-I for Michigan, K-O for kosher, and S-U-P for supervisors, mikosup.com, and find this month's featured products. You'll find Michigan K products wherever fine food is sold, especially at Natural Food Patch on West 9 Mile Road in Ferndale.
Herschel Finman here. You're listening to the Jewish Hour. I got a request from a person who said, don't bother telling that it's a request, but it's at least you can know that if you would like to hear something specific, well, drop me a line at rabbifinman.com, and if I can, I'll play it for you. It's been a long time, probably a philosophical reason more than anything else, that we've played Matisyahu, but Matisyahu does have an a cappella version of One Day, and so this is for that anonymous person who requested it. I hope you enjoy. Bye.
Sometimes I lay under the moon, I thank God I'm breathing. Then I pray, don't take me soon, 'cause I am here for a reason.
Sometimes in my tears I drown, but I never let it get me down. So when negativity surrounds, I know someday it'll all turn around, because all my life I've been waiting for, I've been praying for the people to say that we don't want to fight no more. There'll be no more wars, and our children will play. One day, one day, one day.
It's not about win or lose, 'cause we all lose when they feed on the souls of the innocent. Blood-drenched pavement, keep on moving though the waters stay raging. In this maze, you can lose your way, your way. It might drive you crazy, but don't let it faze you, no way, no way.
Sometimes in my tears I drown,
I drown,
but I never let it get me down,
get me down.
So when negativity surrounds,
surrounds,
I know someday it'll all turn around, because all my life I've been waiting for,
waiting for,
I've been praying for,
praying
for the people to say that we don't wanna fight no more,
fight no
there'll
more,
be no more wars,
no
and
more
our children
wars.
Will play
one day. Down with the hate. One day we'll all be free and proud to be under the same sun, singing songs of freedom like
one day, one day, oh, oh. One day, one day, one day, oh. All my life I've been waiting for, I've been praying for the people to say that we don't wanna fight no more. There'll be no more wars, and our children will play. One day, one day, one day.
Art Studio of Oak Park is now accepting students. Whether you're a real beginner or have been at it for a lifetime, the Art Studio of Oak Park has something for you. All levels welcome, all ages welcome. Private tutoring or small friendly classes. Flexible hours available. The Art Studio of Oak Park is very affordable. Make your life better. Put art into your life. The Art Studio of Oak Park offers lessons in a strictly kosher environment. Call today, 248-542-5087. That's 248-542-5087. It's great having an art room right in the neighborhood.
Herschel Finman here. You're still listening to the Jewish Hour. That's awesome. Thank you so much. This one is from 613, or another one of those a cappella groups, and it's simply called Medley.
Why go to a hospital to get healthy? At Encompass Healthcare, you get the state-of-the-art wound care like in a hospital. The same medicines, the same everything without being in a hospital. Why put yourself at risk of getting a hospital-borne infection? Did you know that last year, 1 in 6 people died in America because of infections they got in hospitals? Encompass Healthcare is an outpatient facility. That means you get your wound care treatment and then go home. There are no wait times at Encompass Healthcare like in ERs. Healthcare is personal and works better, faster, and easier. Encompass Healthcare provides a state-of-the-art outpatient facility close to where you live. Call 248-624-9800. That's 624-9800. Auto accident, workman's comp, and most insurance is accepted. Encompass Healthcare's goal is to get you healthy with as little disturbance to your daily activities. Call 248-624-9800.
Herschel Finman here. You're listening to the Jewish Hour. This week is Behar B'Hukosa. We're starting at chapter 22 of the book of Leviticus and continuing to the end of the book. Next week we start Numbers, get back to a little bit of that good Bible story stuff. In the middle of, towards the end of this week's portion, is something called the Teichacha. It's 49 curses. The basic theme of the portion is you take care of God and God will take care of you. You don't take care of God and God's really going to take care of you. That's the basic theme of the portion. But we believe that there is nothing bad that comes from heaven. Everything that God does is absolutely 100% good and absolutely the best that it could possibly be. And would be the same with the curses. It's just depending on how you interpret it. There is one curse. Can't go through all 98. That would take hours. But it says, I broke the staff of your bread, which means that you're not going to have anywhere to get food from, is this curse. You're not going to have a source of food. Okay, but it doesn't say you're not going to have a source of food. It says, when I break the staff of your bread. The Torah is compared to many things. And one of the things it happens to be compared to is bread. Because bread sustains you, bread fills you up, bread keeps you going, bread allows you to grow. Even though all those Atkins people are saying otherwise and all those gluten-free people, bread is the staff of life. And the Torah is what keeps us alive, keeps us growing. So the Almighty said, listen, you know, you guys already have proven what your metal is. I had to have Moses break the tablets when he first came down the mountain because the Jews were worshiping the golden calf. And this, of course, was a terrible thing. It says that the Jewish people, when they received the Torah on Sinai, were on the level of tzaddikim, of righteous people. On Yom Kippur, when Moses came down with his second tablets, they were only on the level of Balei Tshuva, penitents. But you can't say only penitents, because it says in the Zohar, the spiritual achievements of a penitent are much higher than a righteous person, because righteous person, they're doing everything the same. Everything's good. Everything's perfect. It's flat. A penitent, they did something wrong. They had a fall. But that fall springboarded them to a higher place. And so they're on a higher level once they've actually repented. It was the same with the Torah. Would it have been that the Jews not have done the golden calf? The Torah, the entire Torah, would have consisted of the five books of Moses and the book of Joshua. And that would have been it. That's all. Very small on the shelf. What happened because of the golden calf is we were given the whole oral tradition, which now occupies a place, first of all, 24 books in the Bible, not six. And an oral tradition that's 120,000 volumes plus and growing. So we see there's an advantage to it, because when is it that a person can appreciate bread? You can't take flour and stick it in your mouth and eat it. It won't work. Nor can you say, like, mix the flour with some water and eat it. What you have then is now is paste, and that's just going to clog up your body. It has to be baked. It has to have heat. The heat represents our love of God. And when a person learns Torah, when a person's learning, when a person's doing the commandments, and a person is out doing their Judaism with this love of God, then everything's on full cylinders, and we're getting it straight. We're getting it, as it says at the beginning of the portion, I'll give you what you need when you need it. We got to take a quick commercial break and be right back. Don't go away. You're listening to The Jewish Hour.
Hi, this is Specs Howard from the Specs Howard School of Broadcast Arts. We're happy to sponsor The Jewish Hour and bring quality radio programming to the community. While much of the funding for The Jewish Hour comes from its sponsors, it's listeners like you that help keep The Jewish Hour on the air. Please send your tax-deductible donation to The Jewish Hour, 14,000 West 9 Mile Road, Oak Park, Michigan, 48237. That's 14,000 West 9 Mile Road, Oak Park, Michigan, 48237. Your help is greatly appreciated.
Herschel Finman here. You're listening to The Jewish Hour. Want to get in touch with me? Easy. Go to www.rabbifinman.com, RABBIFINMAN.com. And right on the homepage, you just contact me, send me a letter, something of inquiry, a question, a comment, a statement, a critique of the show, please. Yes, and I will acknowledge it, and we'll write you back, and we'll get to know each other, all about you. You'll also find archived editions of the show for the last 5 weeks. If you want to hear an older show, you've got JCast Network, you've got Stitcher, you've got iTunes. They're all there, and they all have them. Every podcast for the last 5 years is still available. My website's not big enough to hold it, but, thank God there's these other organizations. They're there. We also have archived editions of the E-Parsha, U-Parsha, Hasidic U-Story, which are insights into the portion of the week and the Jewish calendar and other forms other than speaking. And we also have the very important donations page. We're in May, thank God. We just paid March. Yay! The people here at WLQV, Salem Communications, when I walked in and I said, here, I'm paying for March, they were very happy. So they're happy, we're happy, you're happy because you're listening to it. But it's May, we still have to do April. So if you don't mind, please go to rabbifinman.com, go on the donations page, click on the number that you would like, fill it out the form. It's very easy. It's PayPal. It's all very safe and secure. If you have a PayPal account, the whole thing will take you 30 seconds. You won't even feel it. It'll be a wonderful thing. If you don't like doing internet donations, I understand. Send your donation to The Jewish Hour, 14,000 West 9 Mile Road, Oak Park, Michigan, 48237. I've got a quick story for you. Very, very quick story. This following Lag BaOmer, there was a young man by the name of Chaim Zaltzman, who was one of the first students of the Lubavitcher Yeshiva in Lubavitch back in the late 1900s. He was actually 12 years old when he started. His father dropped him off and said, you learn in Yeshiva. I think it was actually an uncle. I think he was an orphan. And because he was young, so he had like lots of energy. So they put him in charge of milking the goats for the milk for the yeshiva. Okay, so every morning he went and he milked the goat, and him and two other friends. And it once happened that they had a great idea. They heard that goats eat anything. So they took a goat, a female goat, this nanny goat, and they dumped a bottle of vodka into a trough, and the goat drank the vodka. And what happened? The goat got drunk. Okay? And then he took this goat and they pushed it into the study hall. Okay, you have people sitting in studying that are anywhere from 15 to 25 years old. They're sitting engrossed in their studies, and there's a drunk goat running around the place doing what drunk goats do. They finally corralled it, got rid of the goat, etc. Now they have to make an investigation. Who did this? They found it was Chaim Zaltzman and his two buddies. They expelled them, told them, go home, pack your bags, get out. We have no place for you. Very sadly, they went to, got on the train, and Chaim said, I'm not leaving. I'm going back. Who's coming with me? So one of his friends did, but the other one said, no, I'm going to go find another yeshiva. And they went back, but the headmaster wouldn't see them. So they went to the headmaster's father, who was a Rebbe Rashab, and he snuck into his room, and he stood there. And the Rashab looked at him. The Rebbe looked at him and said, no, what do you want? He said, I want to learn in Lubavitch. And he said, you have to behave when you're in Lubavitch. He said, I'll behave. He said, we only want sincere people. He said, I'll be sincere. So he said, okay, let me talk to my son, your principal. And he's about to leave, and he started crying again. He said, what? He said, I have a friend also who wants to come back. He said, okay. So some chassidim were later for bringing, and they said the reason why he was accepted back into yeshiva was because he cared about his friend. That's going to do it for us. We thank you for tuning in. We hope we had a chance to entertain you a bit. We hope we had a chance to educate you a bit. We hope you have a great week. We hope to see you again back again next week. Take care.